6th, 1896, and died on the 18th of July, 2009. He was the last surviving founder member of the Royal Air Force and the world's oldest man. This podcast is taken from an interview with Henry Allingham, which is part of the museum's audio collection.
What did you feel when you heard that this war was going to happen?
Well, I wanted to go straight away. Volunteer, get into adventure, you know, it was for a kid like me. But my mother didn't want me to go. And I lost my mother at 42. As soon as I lost my mother, I was in. I joined in 15. Volunteer. So then I was free to go in. I couldn't get it fast enough. I went in. I put myself down. I had a 3.5 TG Triumph. And they wanted men for dispatch riders at the Royal IC in Pall Mall. I went up there, they had 200 on the waiting list because I went back waiting to hear from them. Next morning, no post. Next morning, no post. I thought, I'm going to wait forever for that lot. I happened to go out for saw a plane. I thought, that's for me. But I passed the doctor in Hamilton Arch. I had the medical there. He just banged me on the shoulder and says, you're in. And when I was in there, I went to Emma Pally and passed the test here. And I got my grade in, and first-class air mechanic. I went to Sheerness for a month's training, and then I went from there, and I was put on the Naval Air Station on the East Coast. If you did a job on the aircraft, you had to go, because you had to... We didn't have anything to have the Lewis gun, which was practically early in 16, it would be. The Lewis gun went right through the wall. You could take that, you may know, to pieces with a 303 bullet cartridge. And you had five different ones in the pan of the Lewis gun. There was a 303 bullet, a Pomeroy, incendiary, tracer, and armour piercing. And that was a lot. They were loaded in the pan by the armour. Now, if you did the job on that plane, you had to stand by you. You had to do the, we used to do one from Haysbury Light to Teschelin Light over Holland, and then back here to Lowestoft, and then along the coast back to our place. And we carried pigeons, two pigeons, with the idea that if you ditch, you let one go and hope for the best. But we never had any parachutes. We had a life belt, and that was inflated by air with a little air tube there. Not that and that kind of thing. Well, we never wore them.
Did you ever have to use the pigeons yourself?
No, I didn't, fortunately. No, that was good for me. But we had one lot on. They were on the drink on the there for 5 days. And then they discovered them quite by accident. One of the blokes, the Ocean and the Dryer, with two cruisers looking for them. They were 5 days. And I met a fellow on the when I was Liberty one evening. He said he was on one of the cruisers looking for them. He told me that... The lookout there thought he saw something. They were just about to pack up. They went up and picked them up there. And they drank the water out the radiators because in those days you had no self-aid or any food or anything. So because they drank the water out the radiators and because they were picked up, which they was dead, came back there. We used to go over to the Saturday night. Well, that was where you would see Jerry.
Over?
Holland. See, because you only had about 3.5 hours in the air, and they used to have the 250 shorts, seaplanes.
Is that what you used to go on?
If I did a job on that plane, you do that. So you did the bit, you made sure that your job was done thoroughly. But my name being the A, I seem to be... I got a lot of things I could have done without.
Because you were at the top of the list when they called the list.
Well, there were four watches and you had a different bloke on each watch. It was all chaos, really. There's nothing, procedure. You happened to be unlucky or whatever it was. You got it. Well, I did a lot of trips like that until the other fellas in the mess, they complained about it. Now, I didn't have any more, so I was very glad about that, really. Jerry wouldn't engage after Tessalonica night unless he had the advantage. And so, of course, we used to get altitude there.
Where were the Germans? What station were they
on? Oh, I wouldn't know. They came from anywhere.
Came out, yes.
Anywhere over in Germany, Holland,
yes,
you see.
Yes, that area.
They fly along the coast there. They did a lot of their war by the back door. I mean, they shoot the Russian. I was in Ypres saying for 4 months. And then they'd shoot up the Russian lorries and that sort of thing. They worked by the back door all the time. We were in the Ypres Silence in 1917. I know they had a big battle there, and there was I saw along our airstrip that we had, there was a road there which was out of sight of Jerry. See, so they used to come along there, poor fellas in the trenches, on that Western Front, which we took over, because the ROC were getting such a bashing. And now those men in the trenches, they stood with water up their knees. Now just imagine, standing in the trenches, and you've got to feed, sleep, and drop your shoes. How did they do it? I don't know, I never asked
them. What was your life like on the air station that you were on? What was life like for
you? At home here. No, I had 2 years here, yes, and 2 years overseas. Yeah.
What was it like actually on the with the squadron in Belgium? What was it like in the accommodation for you?
None. You couldn't go down a foot, you were in water. So we had to, what protection we had was sand bags. Because higher up, towards the eastern there, you could get good dugouts. And of course, you lived in the dugout, if you like, up there, but that was a bit of cake.
So did you live in dugouts yourself?
No.
How did you live?
We never had dugouts. No, nothing. You got your food there. You never had a table or chairs or anything like that. You sat on the ground. And you get on the ground, you get your meal, then you have to eat it from here. And so it was good. It was a luxury to sit on the chair.
Yeah.
We didn't stay too long in any one place. But while we were in the sailing, we could see Jerry, he could see us. We were waiting for it any time. It never stopped. We were never shown. Why? Nobody knew. We didn't ever know. And I don't know if they got it after we left, but anyway, that's the way this happened then. Well, that was worse than if you got it.
Were you still in the RNAS when you were...
Yes, in the RNAS.
And you were still fixing aircraft, were you? Or
yes, I was a first-class air mechanic, you see. We used to cannibalise different planes. We had to keep them in the air, you see. We were waiting for parts. Perhaps if we could do that part, we'd do it ourselves. So they kept airworthy. That was the show.
What?
Well, DH-9s and the Bristol Bullet and the Camel and the Cudi Kirk had the Andy Page. Yes.
Were any easier to fix than others?
Well, they're all about the same. They're all vendors' planes made by private firms, not the RAF at Farnborough. Now, every time they came in there, you had to jump out quick because they used to take fire. Woof! They were up, all in flames. I see many men, too many men perhaps. You see them there, they come back from over the line, they'd enough. You know, see their arms go up like that and they burn alive. Men that you knew that you were there with, perhaps had breakfast with that morning by you. And so the orders were that you had to leave them for 20 minutes. Bail out quick. And not bail out the parachute, but get out quick, you see. And then you leave that for 20 minutes. That was the order. I've seen them stand there for 10 minutes and a quarter and another. Woof, all gone. Now, you never had any extinguishers. Nothing. Oh, it was crude. Even when we were knocked out, we were cleaning out of Dunkirk. There's blokes on the Bessons blown up into the rafters, dead. Well, you never had any cranes, you never had any ladders. You said they were dead. You had to lock them down. That was the only thing you could do, which wasn't very nice, really. But then, from then on, it was nothing to do with us. The other people took them over. Army, I think, did that. And then, of course, in the, as you know, a part of the, into 18, I think it was, the ref to Tenshaw was there, and they wanted us to go into the RAF, transfer. Now, to a man, we refused to go. We were RN, and we wanted to keep RN. And exactly, they stood out for a long time. The ref nearly didn't interfere with us at all. We still carried on the same. But they argued the point, sixes and sevens, you know. I used to go out on the ships here, and you'd have two hands forward and two hands off, looking for the mines. Now, those mines, German and ours, there's a bit of bad sea, you know, rough sea, they break a rift.
What year was that?
Sixteen. And then, of course, I went overseas late in 17. Those mines do the chip attack evasive action. When they got far enough away, half a dozen of ship's hands would shoot at them with rifles and blow them up. Well, they were nasty, you see. Of course, night time, you had to take a chance. But it wasn't any one ship that struck those mines. All hands gone. I never knew any ship where anybody would say they were vicious mines. Because when they blew up, they would go up here like as higher than this place.
Did the rifle fire successfully destroy them?
Six of them, yes. Yeah. They blow them up all right. But, of course, in the night, they floated around and just took a chance. Well, I had my first trip in early 16. Uh-huh. My name being Ian, four watches, and there was no procedure. Each time I got it, and then the other fellas, they wanted to do it. They didn't know what they were letting themselves in for exactly.
Was that on a seaplane across? See,
we had a shot with Snyder on board, floats, two floats. And of course, we only had air bottles to start the thing up with. I mean, if it was on the deck or whatever, you could swim the prop, we'd get a start. But those air bottles weren't strong enough. Now, it wasn't our job to put that aircraft over the side. That was a crew's job. The old man used to say, no, pull on the edge, or pull on this one, that one, vast all in, and so on. And so he'd get there. It was primitive.
Where was it starting from? The very edge of the deck? Or
Well, they were on deck, and they were fastened down on the deck.
Yes, until they had got the power up.
No, you couldn't start them there. So you couldn't put them over the side with the prop turning. You couldn't swing the prop. And of course, when they got on the drink, you couldn't do that there. No way. That's where they do. And bottles were not powerful enough. And so men sometimes they get over, they try and try and try, and you couldn't get a start, and it was abort, you know, couldn't do anything about
it. And then was it pulled
sometimes
back
they
on?
Get going. Yeah.
Was it pulled back onto the ship again then?
No, we have to get it back off the street. And of course, you couldn't stick around because of the subs. We were submarine chasing, really. That was the purpose of the exercise. And so that was life on those ships there.
What was your first ship?
Brocklesby. That was that used to go along from Hull to Little Holland on the Humber, I think, River Humber. But nevertheless, on the Brocklesby, now the Killingham, he torpedoed there. The Killingham, the sister ship to the Brocklesby, that used to, they were crossing between Holland and Little Holland on the Humber. I think it was a River Humber, I'm not sure about that. And on the Brock, we could get four planes. I had about two trips, as far as I know, on the Brock, and then all the rest were on the trawlers. We could only have one plane on the trawlers.
Were they always Snyders?
Always a sock with Snyder. That was a good fast plane, and it was a good plane. Because the Snyder, they still stuck to the name that was shot with. When they did that one at Southampton, which got the speed, you know. And so it was Snyder right the way through, they stuck to it. It was a good plane, seaplane. And so that was the ones we used to, you know, pin our faith on. You could see the subs if they went to the No, if they were in the weed, you couldn't see them. If you saw them on the sand, they stood out like a sore thumb. On the planes, 64-pound bombs, or 416, and we had a dozen incendiaries, and that was the lot. When I first went in, I had two rifles in the cockpit. I'd never seen a plane before, really, but I was, you know, trained afterwards. And I was duty watch, and they said, if there's any comes on tonight, you've got to be here, and if you have to get out, if you had the two rifles. And I fired six shots. Well, you see, it was not long before, you know, I made 53 yards at the altitude of about 6 foot, and then they came, everything there in the machine. So we were in the experimental stage almost. And that was, you know, they made a lot of progress. I think they made the most progress towards halfway through 16 to 17. We never had any radio, we had nothing. And so, of course, you just took a chance. If you ditch in those seas, 60 miles out to sea, well, you'd make the best of it, eh? So it went on.
When you were in the aeroplanes, what aeroplanes were those?
Well, shorts, 250 shorts.
Where were the 250 shorts based?
That was from Britain.
Yes.
Yeah, from the air station. Right. There's a book written, I don't know if you know it, Tales of a North Sea Air Station. Do you remember Ebert Cadbury? He got three zips. What did he get for it? Nothing.
No.
The first bloke that got one, he got the Victoria. Yeah,
straight
you
away.
Remember?
Yes,
yeah.
But Cadbury. That's right.
Well, I did one or two missions with Cadbury.
Oh, yes. What was he like? Yes.
he was a big fella. He just came down for Cambridge. He married Miss Four Liz, the vicar, daughter of Gorston. We came back from Bacton. There's a night landing strip there. We came. I went up there with a little bloke named Woods. And all my gear went on the Crossley up there, and we flew up there with Woods because along the coast it was easy navigation. And then I came back with Cadbury. And when we came back, he was a good pilot. He knocked the undercarriage away. We made a belly landing to get it. He stood there. I thought I'd heard all the what have you, but boy, he did have a vocabulary of all the. Yeah.
Did he get on all right with you?
Mad. He was quite decent to deal with, because in those days, you know, a commission man, you had to stand and wouldn't talk to them, or you couldn't speak to them unless they spoke to you, sort of style. That was stubby. When I was on the other side, Newton Clare it was, I could have had a commission. Well, I it was really through that. I told him exactly. My old Nana had brought me up, and I told him that I was all for it, you see. But I said, I dare not take it unless I saw it. But out of the blue, I never expected, so I'll give you a 4-day special and make your mind up, because that was a bit of manner for me. I went there, and saw my Dorothy, the girl I was, sweet on, and she was with me there.
Where was that, sorry?
Well, when I got home.
Back here, yeah.
When on the leaf, you see. So instead of getting the commission, by what Nana said to me, I got married. Yeah. I was arranged to get married.
Yeah, that's it.
What a difference. Because I went back, saw Newton there, and I said, no, he said, well, it's too old to have any time you want it.
Yeah,
it's still but I never available. Took it. No, never I took never it. Took it. No.
So, what air stations did you work on in Britain? Were you at Great Yarmouth?
No. Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
And
what was Great Yarmouth like as a place? Were there good facilities on the air station for you to?
Yeah, that was on the Deans, because the Deans now is all crowded out. It was a factory serving the oil ships and the gas ships, you know, out there. So Nelson's Collins stood out like, that's diminished now, you can't see it. But we had that airstrip there.
Yes.
And the army used to do all the guarding of the air station. Yes. We didn't do that. And so we had, that's where we used to go over at the station in night. night and morning, we'd start out in the dark, so it got daylight as we went along to be over there early. I don't know why they did it so early, but they always did. You couldn't fly in any old weather. Had to be good weather. I've seen those planes, the RAF, the old B-2C, and the RAF, they go along like this and suddenly they start to fly backwards. Yeah. Because their airspeed was less than the cyclonic with the wind.
Yeah.
So here they, you see them coming along, and then suddenly they start to go like, it's too full out.
Just go full out engine yeah. And going backwards, yeah.
Give it the gun and fly back. And then, because when the wind dropped, they start to go forward. They turn around, target the wind, they go like the flappers.
Where were you when the armistice was declared? Where were you stationed?
No, when the armistice was declared, we were somewhere towards, on that place there, we could see the whole of the front there, by off of Sonoma. And so then we had to go for Sonoma and follow through, you know, our lot there, to get into Flanders. And then get through into Germany with after the armistice, that was. Army of Occupation in Cologne.
Did you have to do that?
Well, I got there to Cologne in early December. And I got away first in, first out. Yeah. And I was demobbed in March, early March.
What was it like being in Germany? What did you have to do there?
Well, we were on Bittmendorf Aerodrome, and of course I was fortunate, I was fluent in language. And so I got a good job through that. And then I was, instead of being Bittmendorf Aerodrome, after the armistice, because everything was all sevens and eights and sixes and sevens. I didn't know when coming and going, what we were going to do, or any, no idea. It was all schmozzle. And so then...
What did you do then?
Yeah. I used to arrange a billet for all the people, used to the squadron. My bloke said to me, he wasn't much older than me, he said, we'd have a good billet when we get to Cologne. So he went, we got in the Cologne Hotel. He was up one floor below me, I was in the floor above, and his batman was there, you know. And the chef at that hotel there, he knew London and perfect English. He'd worked there in London for about 7 years. And so, because what was his name? I can't remember the batman's name. He would get enough rations for him, and we could feed him, and he used to do our food for us, because they were starving. Germans were in a terrible way, you know. They had paper for underclothes, and they hardly they were practically starvation. I went down the kitchen once to see the chef, and he said, there was a woman eating some bread or whatever it was on the table. It was black. I said, what's that person eating there? He said, it's their bread. And he went over there and he cut me a cube smaller than an Oxo cube. Yeah, I said, try it. I indigested for about two hours after. And that was just, I don't know what it was. I think it was sawdust or whatever, you heaven knows. They were literally, how they held on as long as they did, I don't know. They were in a terrible state, really. They had nothing of anything.